Chapter 14. "Today we have an excellent Wiener Schnitzel," the marabou said. "Good," Graeber replied. "We'll take it, and everything with it that you recommend. We put ourselves entirely in your hands."
"The same wine?"
"The same or a different one, if you wish. We leave that to you, too." The waiter stalked off, gratified. Graeber leaned back and looked at Elisabeth. He felt as though he had been transported from a shell-torn sector of the front into a place of peace. The afternoon was far away. There remained only an afterglow of that moment when life had suddenly been very close to him, when up through the paving stones and ruins it had seemed to burst forth in the trees stretching out their green hands to grasp the light. 2 weeks, he thought. 2 weeks more of life. I must grasp it the way the linden tree grasped the light. The marabou came back.
"How would a young wine do today?" he asked. "We have a Johannesberger Kallenberg. Champagne's common soda water, by comparison."
"The Johannesberger Kallenberg," Graeber said.
"Very good, sir. You are a connoisseur. The wine will go admirably with the schnitzel. I will give you a tossed green salad as well. It will bring out the sparkling bouquet."
The condemned man's last meal, Graeber thought. 2 weeks of last meals. He thought it without bitterness. Until now, he had not looked beyond his furlough. It had seemed endless. Too much had happened, and too much seemed still to lie before him. Now, after reading the war news and being with Polman, he suddenly knew how short it was, and how soon he would have to go back. Elisabeth followed the marabou with her eyes.
"Blessings on your friend Reuter," she said. "He has turned us into connoisseurs."
"We're no connoisseurs, Elisabeth. We're more than that. We are knights errant of peace. The war has turned everything upside down. What used to be the symbol of security and stale bourgeois respectability has today become a great adventure." Elisabeth laughed.
"We make it that."
"Not we. It is the times. But there's certainly one thing we can't complain of. Boredom and monotony." Graeber looked at Elisabeth. She was sitting on the banquette opposite him and was wearing a close-fitting dress. Her hair was hidden under a little cap. She looked almost like a boy.
"Monotony," she said. "Weren't you going to wear civilian clothes this evening?"
"I couldn't. Hadn't any place to change." He had intended to change at Alphonse's, but after the afternoon's conversation, he had not gone back.
"You can do it at my place," Elisabeth said.
"At your place? And Frau Lisa?"
"To hell with Frau Lisa. I've been thinking about it."
"To hell with a lot of things," Graeber said. "I've been thinking too." The waiter brought the wine and opened it, but he did not pour. He held his head cocked to one side, listening.
"There it goes again," he said. "I'm sorry, sir."
He had no need to explain what he meant. The next moment, the howling of the sirens had risen above the chatter in the room. Elisabeth's glass rang.
"Where's the nearest cellar?" Graeber asked the marabou.
"We have one here in the hotel."
"Isn't that reserved for guests?"
"You are a guest, sir. The cellar is very good. Better than a good many elsewhere. We have important officers here."
"All right. What will become of the Wiener Schnitzels?"
"They're not on the fire yet. I'll save them. I can't serve them down there, though. You understand why."
"Of course."
Graeber took the bottle out of the marabou's hand and filled two glasses. He handed one to Elisabeth.
"Drink this, and drink it all."
She shook her head.
"Don't we have to go? We have plenty of time. That was just the first alarm. Perhaps nothing at all will happen, like last time." "Drink it up, Elisabeth. It helps you over the first fright."
"I believe the gentleman is right," said the marabou. "It is a shame to toss off so noble a wine, but this is a special case."
He was pale and smiled with an effort.
"Sir," he said to Graeber, "formerly we used to look up to heaven to pray. Now we do it to curse. That's what we've come to."
Graeber looked at Elisabeth.
"Drink it down. We still have lots of time. We could empty a whole bottle."
She lifted her glass and drained it slowly.
She did it with a determined gesture that had in it, at the same time, a kind of reckless prodigality.
Then she put down her glass and smiled.
To hell with panic, too, she said. I must get used to this. Look how I'm trembling.
You're not trembling. It's life in you that's trembling. That has nothing to do with courage. One has courage when one can do something to defend himself. All the rest is vanity. The life in us is smarter than we are, Elizabeth.
Good. Give me some more to drink.
My wife, said the marabou. Our youngster is sick, tuberculosis. He's 11. Our cellar is not good. It is hard for her to get the youngster down there. She is delicate. 106 pounds. 29 Zutstrasse. I cannot help her. I have to stay here.
Graeber picked up a glass from the next table, filled it, and offered it to the waiter. Here, drink this with us. There's an old soldier's rule. When there's nothing you can do, don't get excited. Does that help you?
It's easy to say.
Right. We are not all born statues. Empty the glass.
It is not permitted on duty.
This is a special case. You just said so yourself.
Very good.
The waiter looked around and accepted the glass.
May I take the liberty of drinking to your promotion?
To what?
To your promotion to corporal.
Thanks. You have sharp eyes. The waiter put down his glass.
I can't empty it at one gulp, sir. Not a noble wine like this. Not even in this special case.
That does you honor. Take the glass with you.
Thank you, sir.
Graeber refilled Elizabeth's glass and his own. I'm not doing this to show how cool-headed we are, he said. I'm doing it simply because it's better during an air raid to drink whatever you have. You never know whether you'll find it again. Elizabeth looked at his uniform.
Won't you be caught if the cellar is full of officers?
No, Elizabeth.
Why not?
Because I don't care.
Aren't people caught if they don't care?
Less often. Fear attracts attention.
And now come. We've got over the first fright.
A part of the wine cellar had been reinforced with steel and concrete and had been fitted up as an air raid shelter. Chairs, tables, and sofas stood around. A few worn carpets lay on the floor, and the walls had been newly whitewashed. There was a radio, and on a sideboard stood glasses and bottles. It was a shelter deluxe. They found a place at one side where the real wine cellar was shut off by a latticework door. A swarm of guests were pushing their way in. Among them was a very beautiful woman in a white evening gown. Her back was bare and her left arm flashed with bracelets. A noisy blonde with a face like a carp followed her. Then came a number of men, an older woman, and a group of officers. A waiter and a busboy appeared. They began to open bottles.
We could have brought our wine with us, Graeber said.
Elizabeth shook her head. You're right. It's damned play acting.
One oughtn't to do that, she said. It's bad luck.
She's right, Graeber thought, and looked angrily at the waiter who was going around with his tray. It's not courage. It's frivolity. Danger is too serious a thing for that. How serious and how profound, one only knew after much death.
The second warning, said someone behind him. They're coming.
Graeber pushed his chair close to Elizabeth.
I'm afraid, she said. In spite of the Johannesberger Kallenberg and all my resolutions.
So am I. He put his arm around her shoulders and felt how tense she was. A wave of tenderness suddenly came over him. She was like an animal that smells danger and draws itself together. She had no pose and wanted none. Her courage was her defense. Life contracted in her at the changed tone of the sirens, which now meant death, and she did not try to hide it. He saw that the blonde's escort was staring at him. He was a thin first lieutenant with a pointed chin. The blonde laughed and was being admired from the next table. A mild tremor ran through the cellar. Then came the muffled rumble of an explosion. The conversation halted and then began again, louder and more self-conscious. Three more explosions followed, quick and nearer. Graeber held Elizabeth tight. He saw that the blonde had stopped laughing. A heavier blow unexpectedly shook the cellar. The busboy put down his tray and clung to the spiral columns of the buffet.
Don't get excited, someone shouted. It's a long way off.
Suddenly the walls rippled and cracked. The light flickered as in a bad film. There was a sound of crashing. Darkness and light alternated wildly, and in the jumpy flashes, the groups at the tables seemed like frames of an extremely slow-motion picture. The woman with the bare back was still sitting in the first flash. In the next, she was standing. In the third, she was running into the next darkness. And then people were there, holding her, and she was screaming, and the light went out completely. And in a roar that was re-echoed 100 times, all the Earth's gravity seemed to neutralize, and the cellar hung suspended.
"It's only the light, Elizabeth," Graber shouted. "It has gone out. It was just the shock of the explosion, nothing more. The wiring has been broken somewhere. The hotel has not been hit."
She pressed against him.
"Candles! Matches!" someone shouted. "There must be candles somewhere. Hell and damnation, where are the candles? Or flashlights?"
A few matches flared. They seemed like small marsh lights in the great resounding space, and they lighted faces and hands as though the bodies had already been destroyed by the roar, and only the bare hands and faces were left floating there.
"Damn it, hasn't the management any emergency lights? Where's that waiter?"
The circles of light wavered to and fro and up and down on the walls. For an instant, the woman's bare back was there, the glitter of jewelry and a dark open mouth. They seemed to flutter in a black wind, and the voices were like the weak screeches of field mice above the deep rumble of opening abysses. Then a howl arose, increasing until it became maddening and unbearable, as though a huge steel planet were plunging straight at the cellar. Everything shook. The circles of light shuddered and went out. The cellar was no longer suspended. The monstrous roar seemed to break up everything and cast it into the air. Graber felt as though his head were flying up to the ceiling. He clasped Elizabeth with both hands. It was as though she were being torn away from him. He threw himself against her, over her, and pulled her to the floor, tilted a chair over her head, and waited for the ceiling to fall. There was a splintering and clattering, a tearing and roaring and cracking, as though a giant paw had struck the cellar and thrown it into a vacuum so that lungs and stomachs were torn out of bodies and the blood forced out of veins. It seemed as if all that could come now was the last thundering darkness and suffocation. It did not come. Instead, there was suddenly light. A quick, twisting light, as though a pillar of fire had burst up out of the floor. A white torch was there. A woman screaming, "I'm burning! I'm burning! Help! Help!" She sprang up and beat about her with her arms, sparks cascading under her blows. Jewels glittered. Her horrified face was starkly lit. Then voices and parts of uniforms descended on her. Someone pulled her to the floor. She twisted and screamed, a scream that soared above the sirens and the flak and the destruction, high, inhuman, and then muffled, deadened, under coats and tablecloths and cushions in the dark cellar, as though from a grave. Graber held Elizabeth's head between his hands, under him. He pressed it against himself and his arm against her ear, until the blaze and the screaming had ceased and the whimpering had turned into darkness and the smell of burned clothes and flesh and hair.
"A doctor! Get a doctor! Is there a doctor here?"
"What?"
"We must get her to a hospital. Damn it, you can't see a thing. We've got to get her out of here."
"Now?"
someone asked.
"Where to?"
Everyone fell silent. They were listening. Outside, the anti-aircraft guns were firing madly, but the explosions had stopped. Only the guns were in action.
"They're gone. It's over."
"Stay where you are," Graber said in Elizabeth's ear. "Don't move. It's over. But stay on the floor. No one will step on you here. Don't move."
"We must wait for a while. There may be another wave,"
a slow schoolmaster's voice announced.
"It's not yet safe outside. The shell fragments of the flak."
A round beam of light fell through the door. It came from a flashlight. The woman on the floor began to scream again.
"No, no, beat it out. Beat out the fire."
"It's not a fire, it's a flashlight."
The spot of light wavered feebly through the darkness. It was a very small flashlight.
"This way, come over here. Who is it? Who are you with that light?"
The beam swung rapidly around, glided over the ceiling and back again, and lighted a starched shirt front, part of a dinner jacket, a black tie, and an embarrassed face.
"I'm the head waiter, Fritz. The dining room is destroyed. We cannot go on serving. If the gentleman will perhaps pay..."
"What?"
Fritz continued to hold the light on himself.
"The attack is over. I have brought this flashlight and the checks.
What? That's unbelievable!
Sir, Fritz replied helplessly into the darkness. The head waiter is personally responsible to the restaurant.
Unbelievable, snorted a man in the dark. Are we swindlers? Don't keep lighting up your miserable face. Come here, as quick as you can. Someone is hurt.
Fritz disappeared again in the darkness. The circle of light wandered over the walls, over a lock of Elizabeth's hair, along the floor to a bundle of uniforms and stopped there.
My God,
said a man, now palely visible in his shirt sleeves. He leaned back. Now only his hands were lighted. The beam wavered over them. The head waiter was shaking visibly. Army coats were thrust aside.
My God,
the man said once more. Don't look, Graber said. That sort of thing happens. It can happen anywhere. It has nothing to do with the air raid, but you mustn't stay in the city. I'll take you to a village that won't be bombed. I know one. I know people there. They'll take you in. We can live there, and you will be safe.
A stretcher, said the kneeling man. Have you a stretcher in the hotel?
I think so. Yes, Herr... Herr...
Head waiter Fritz could not distinguish the man's rank. The blouse of his uniform lay with the others on the floor beside the woman. He was now just a man in braces with a sword around his waist and a commanding voice.
I beg your pardon about the checks, Fritz said. I did not know that someone was injured.
Hurry up! Get the stretcher! Or no, wait, I'll go with you. How is it outside? Can we get through?
Yes.
The man got up, put on his blouse, and was suddenly a major. The light disappeared, and it was as though a ray of hope had disappeared with it. The woman's whimpering became audible.
Wanda, said a frantic male voice. Wanda, what are we to do? Wanda!
We can leave now, someone announced.
The all-clear hasn't sounded yet, replied the schoolmaster's voice.
To hell with the all-clear. Where's the light?
Light!
No light, screamed the woman. No light!
We need a doctor. Morphine!
Wanda,
said the frantic voice.
What can we possibly tell Eberhardt? What?
The light came back. This time it was an oil lamp carried by the major. Two waiters in evening clothes came behind him carrying a stretcher.
No telephone, said the major. The wires are down. This way with the stretcher.
He placed the lamp on the floor.
Wanda,
the man said again.
Wanda!
Get back, said the major. Later.
He kneeled beside the woman and then straightened up.
So, that's taken care of. She'll soon be asleep.
I had one hypodermic left for emergencies.
Careful!
Be careful how you lift her.
We'll have to wait outside till we find an ambulance. If we find one.
Yes, Herr Major,
head waiter Fritz said obediently. The stretcher swayed out. The black, burned, hairless head rolled back and forth on it. The body was covered by a tablecloth.
Is she dead?
Elizabeth asked. No, Graber said. She'll pull through. Her hair will grow again.
And her face?
She could still see. Her eyes weren't injured. It will all heal. I've seen lots of burned people. This wasn't especially bad.
How did it happen?
Her dress caught fire. She got too close to the matches. Nothing more has happened. This cellar is good. It has withstood a heavy direct hit. Graber picked up the chair that he had tilted over Elizabeth. In doing so, he stepped on fragments of a broken bottle and saw that the latticed door to the wine cellar had fallen from its hinges. A number of racks hung awry. Bottles were broken and strewn everywhere, and wine was flowing over the floor like dark oil.
Just a minute, he said to Elizabeth, and picked up his coat. I'll be right back.
He went into the cellar and returned at once.
All right.
Now we can go. Outside stood the stretcher with the woman on it. Two waiters were whistling through their fingers for a car.
What in the world will Eberhardt say?
Her escort with the frantic voice asked again.
My God, what damnable bad luck! How can we possibly explain it to him?
Eberhardt must be the husband, Graber thought, and tapped one of the whistling waiters on the shoulder.
Where's the waiter from the wine room?
Which? Otto or Karl?
A little old fellow who looks like a stork.
Otto,
the waiter looked at Graber.
Otto is dead.
The wine room caved in. He was hit by the chandelier.
Otto is dead, sir.
Graber was silent for a moment.
I owe him money, he said then.
for a bottle of wine.
The waiter wiped his forehead. You can give it to me, sir. What was it?
A bottle of Johannesberger Kahlenberg.
The waiter produced a list from his pocket and snapped on his flashlight. 4 marks, if you please, together with tip 44. Graeber gave him the money. The waiter put it in his pocket. Graeber knew he would not hand it in.
Come, he said to Elizabeth.
They picked their way through the ruins. Toward the south, the city was in flames. The sky was gray and red, and the wind was driving swathes of smoke before it.
We must go and see whether your apartment still exists, Elizabeth.
She shook her head.
There's always time for that. Let's stay somewhere in the open.
They came to the square with the air raid shelter to which they had gone on the first evening. The entrance gaped in the gloomy dusk like an entrance to the underworld. They sat down on a bench in the park.
Are you hungry?
Graeber asked.
You didn't get anything to eat. That doesn't matter. I couldn't eat now.
He unfolded his overcoat. There was a tinkling sound, and he pulled 2 bottles out of the pockets.
I don't know just what I've got hold of. This one looks like cognac.
Elizabeth stared at him.
Where did you get them?
Out of the wine cellar. The door was open. Dozens of bottles were smashed. Let's assume that these would have been broken, too.
You simply took them?
Of course. A soldier who neglects an open wine cellar is sick.
I was raised to think and act practically.
The 10 Commandments don't hold for the military.
They certainly don't.
Elizabeth looked at him.
There's a good deal more that doesn't either.
She laughed suddenly.
What does one really know about any of you?
You already know rather too much.
What does one really know about you?
She repeated.
What is here is not really you. You are what you come from. But who knows anything about that?
Out of the other side of his coat, Graeber drew 2 more bottles. Here's one I can open without a corkscrew. It's champagne. He twisted the wire off. I hope you have no moral scruples against drinking it.
No, not anymore.
We'll not celebrate anything with it, so it won't be bad luck. We'll drink it because we're thirsty and haven't anything else, and also because we're still alive. Elizabeth smiled.
You don't have to explain that to me again. I've learned it already. But explain something else. Why did you pay for the 1 bottle when you were taking 4 more away with you?
There's a big difference. The other would have been welching on a debt. It grew still. The red dusk extended more and more. Everything became unreal in the strange light.
Just look at that tree over there, Elizabeth said suddenly. It's blooming.
Graeber looked at it. The tree had been almost torn out of the ground by a bomb. Some of its roots hung free in the air. The trunk was broken and several of the branches had been torn off, but it was actually full of white blossoms tinged by the reddish glow.
The house beside it has burned down. Perhaps the heat has forced it, he said. It's farther out than any of the other trees around here, and yet it's the most damaged.
Elizabeth got up and went over to it. The bench stood in the shadow, and she stepped out of it into the wavering glow of the conflagration like a dancer stepping onto a lighted stage. It embraced her like a red wind and blazed behind her like a gigantic medieval comet announcing the end of a world or the birth of a savior.
It's blooming, she said. For it, this is spring and nothing else. Nothing else matters to it.
Yes, Graeber replied. They teach us lessons. They teach us lessons all the time. At noon today, it was a linden tree that was teaching me, and now it's this. They grow and put out leaves, and even when they're torn out of the ground, the part that still has a bit of root in the earth goes on growing. They teach us lessons unceasingly, and they don't complain or feel sorry for themselves. Elizabeth slowly came back. Her skin shimmered in the strange, shadowless light, and her face seemed enchanted and aroused by a secret that was connected with the bursting buds and the destruction and the imperturbable deliberateness of growth. Then she stepped out of the glow, as though out of a spotlight, and was once more warm and darkly breathing and alive in the shadow beside him.
He drew her down to him, and the tree was suddenly there, very big, the tree that reached for the red sky, and its blossoms seemed very close. And it was the linden tree, and then the earth, and it arched and became field and sky and Elizabeth. And he felt himself in her, and she did not resist him.